Welcome back to EVR 2858, Lesson 6. We're now looking at the Everglades. By the end of this lecture, you should be able to describe why the federal government does not file lawsuits in state courts, the five agencies represented on the Technical Oversight Committee, TOC, the two national parks, one national preserve, and one national wildlife refuge, which are included in the SERP, C-E-R-P, and which entity does Congress identify in the SERP authorization, providing scientific review of all projects proposed under SERP? All right, so the Everglades, the River of Grass. Let's take a look at the wetlands in our backyard, i.e. the Everglades. Prior to the massive human-caused alterations to Florida's landscape, the Everglades River of Grass actually started north of Orlando and flowed all the way through the Keys. Only the more habitable areas along the coastlines were used for human development to start out with. As more people moved into the state, more land was needed to accommodate them. The Tamiami Trail was constructed in 1928, cutting off the Everglades National Park, including Florida Bay, from the natural sheet flow. The major drainage events happened in the 1940s in order to address the flooding problems in Central and South Florida. Let's look at the flow. The next four pictures show a historical perspective and the current perspective of Everglades water flow. Notice how the historical pictures on the left sides are mostly free-flowing from sawgrass plain habitat to ridge and slough habitat and on down. With the current flows on the right, it has been greatly narrowed and has many breaks in it. So we have the environmental damage from the CNSF project and other sources. CNSF stands for Central and South Florida. There was a loss of more than 50% of the Everglades. It altered the hydro patterns. There was a great loss of wading bird habitat. There were losses of tree islands due to hydro pattern alteration and nutrient enrichment. Proliferation of exotic plants and animals. Massive algal blooms in Lake Okeechobee. Then you have the spread of nuisance cattails in the Everglades and mercury contamination in the food web. Historically, the Everglades were nutrient limited, particularly with respect to phosphorus. Excessive nutrient loading from agricultural and urban sources has led to detrimental and biological impacts. So there's increased cattail. There's soil oxidation resulting from excessive dry down of the peat. The base food web, periphyton, has been altered. And ecological changes impacts at higher trophic levels and biomass reductions. So here's a timeline of environmental actions in the Everglades. This next picture gives a brief timeline of what's gone on. So flood control was achieved in part by routing water that would have gone to the Everglades out to tide, meaning out to the sea, the ocean, either the Atlantic or the Gulf. Much of the water that did enter the Everglades was directed through canals, rather than being distributed more evenly across the system. In some areas, like Shark River Slough in Everglades National Park, flows were almost completely blocked by levees. So let's look at the litigation chronology. Lawsuit was filed in 1988. The litigation, the court hearings, occurred between 88 and 91. A settlement agreement was reached in 1991. It established total phosphorus levels and limits for the refuge, the Loxahatchee National Wildlife Refuge, and the park, Everglades National Park. The consent decree was entered in 1992. The Everglades Forever Act was passed in 1994. And Everglades Construction Projects, BMPs, phosphorus threshold research begins in 1994. All right, a side note. As we will see, this remains an active lawsuit. It is one of the longest federal environmental lawsuits in the U.S. Can you guess what the second active one is? It's Exxon Valdez. Although there are some legal folks that think that Exxon Valdez is the longest, it's reversed because the consent decree for the Everglades was put in place after Valdez, even though the lawsuit started before the Valdez. And this is one of my favorite extra credit questions. All right, so Everglades in the courts. On October 11, 1988, the United States of America filed a lawsuit in the U.S. District Court, Southern District of Florida, Miami Division, against the South Florida Water Management District, John Wadraska, the then executive director of the district, the Florida Department of Environmental Regulation, which is now the Florida Department of Environmental Protection, and Dale Twachtman, which was the secretary of the DER. So the lawsuit. This next picture shows you the title page of a pleading filed with the court. Remember from the first lecture that this is the paperwork you file with the court telling the court there is a legal conflict which needs to be resolved, that the court is the court who can hear the conflict, standing in venue, and the court can enforce a solution to the conflict. All right, notice it's October 11th, 1988. So the United States is plaintiff. This case is in the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Florida. Why not just sue Florida in Florida State Court? Volume 28, Section 1345 of the United States Code states, except as otherwise provided by Act of Congress, the District Courts shall have original jurisdiction of all civil actions, suits, or proceedings commenced by the United States or by any agencies or officer thereof expressly authorized to sue by Act of Congress. And the proper citation, of course, is 28 U.S.C. section symbol 1345. So the English translation, if the federal government sues someone, the case can only be tried in federal court. If the state of Florida makes a change to something related to water quality, even if not directly related to this lawsuit, the federal government can challenge it. But only in federal court, and only if it violates a federal law or the U.S. Constitution. All right, the pleading. With pleadings, the language is very specific, and there is a lot of legal minutiae that must be included. This is what you hire a lawyer for. If you don't tell the court, hey, Judge X, you can decide the subject matter of this case because you have authority over the parties to the case, and this particular courthouse is the one I can stand up in to argue this case, you will not get through the door. Take a look at the list of parties in the pleading. There are a total of five entities. The U.S. Department of Justice represents the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Everglades National Park, and the ARM Loxahatchee National Wildlife Refuge. The other two are the South Florida Water Management District and the Florida Department of Environmental Regulation, now called the Florida Department of Environmental Protection, FDEP. The Miccosukee Tribe has a Memorandum of Understanding, MOU if you've seen that term, with the Everglades National Park, but they cannot directly participate in the lawsuit. Now, note, when dealing with environmental law, the plaintiff is not primarily looking for money damages. The plaintiff is looking for the defendant to stop dumping stuff into a river, put a filter on their smokestack, clean up the toxic waste they dumped, or something like that. There is money involved, but not to be paid to make the plaintiff go away, but to resolve the environmental degradation that has occurred. So, what were the feds asking for when they filed this lawsuit in 1988? The United States requested the DER, now FDEP, and the South Florida Water Management District, obey state law. The DER and the district not deliver polluted and tainted water to the Everglades National Park and the ARM Loxahatchee National Wildlife Refuge. The DER and the district to hold up their end of the bargain in the 1984 contract. The DER and the district to stop harming the United States as a downstream riparian river owner. The DER and the district to stop harming the Everglades National Park. The list of the parties to the lawsuit today. Well, we have the U.S. Department of the Interior, which covers the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the National Park Service, the Army Corps of Engineers, South Florida Water Management District, the Florida Department of Environmental Protection, the Miccosukee Tribe, and then we've got City of Belgate, City of Clewiston, Defenders of Wildlife, Environmental Defense Fund, Florida, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, we looked at who sued in the original one. Well, take a look at this who are involved in the case today. There are just a whole slew of people who wanted in on this case. Now, please note, when I am referring to lawsuit, I'm talking about all the legal wrangling over the Everglades. There have been multiple lawsuits filed by differing parties against both the federal government and the state government. First, there was a complaint filed by the U.S. government against the state of Florida. This led to the settlement agreement, which is part of the consent decree. So I'm mentioning some legal terms here: settlement agreement, consent decree. A settlement agreement is an agreement between two parties to a lawsuit, where the parties themselves negotiate how they want to settle their disagreement without the court making the decision. Anyone confused by this definition? Let me know. Now, a consent decree is when a settlement agreement is reached between two parties to a lawsuit, and the court finds the agreement is just and fair and incorporates the settlement agreement as part of the final adjudication of the case. With a settlement agreement, there doesn't necessarily have to be a decision by the judge, or it can just be incorporated within the court decree. With a consent decree, there is a written decision by the judge, which includes the settlement agreement, but the judge reserves the right to oversee the settlement agreement via a consent decree. So the case is still active. No changes can be made to this settlement agreement without the judge agreeing to them. Now, I've supplied y'all with a copy of this consent decree settlement agreement as additional reading materials for this lecture. What does it state? If you don't want to go through it, which is fine. The parties agree to settle. Settlement agreement is reached. It was approved by a federal judge and entered as a consent decree. The judge retains oversight of the settlement. This is key. And the consent decree is located at volume 847 of the federal supplement, starting on page 1567. And it was decided in the Southern District of Florida in 1992. Here, the consent decree established water quality requirements in the form of total phosphorus levels and limits. The refuge levels are a monthly geometric mean of 14 interior stations compared to a target which varies by hydrology. The park limits is a 12-month flow-weighted mean at inflow points, evaluated yearly, October 1st through September 30th, and compared to a target which varies by hydrology. Note the year date, October 1 to September 30th, is the federal year. The refuge interim levels effective 1999, the park interim levels effective 2003, and long-term limits effective December 31st, 2006. It required establishment of numeric criteria and the development of STAs and BMPs to achieve the above targets. Now, we have in Appendix B the Loxahatchee Refuge component. Here is a look at the Loxahatchee Refuge plans. Note the monitoring stations are not at the point of inflows or discharge outflows in NPDES language. You have the EAA, the Everglades Agricultural Area, STAs, Stormwater Treatment Area, WCA, Water Conservation Areas. So look at how all this flows out of Lake Okeechobee. Looking at this map, it shows where the stormwater treatment areas are, from the north end of the refuge and buffering between the Everglades Agricultural Area and the water conservation areas over to the west by Big Cypress. This is from the South Florida Water Management District. The Everglades National Park component is in Appendix A, and here is the breakdown of that plan, known as the Central Everglades Planning Project, CEP, General Project Area. Now, this figure shows the water conservation areas as they lead into Shark River Slough in the Everglades National Park. The thin blue lines are canals. The legend shows what is being removed, as well as pump stations, levees, and other structures. The figure is from the Army Corps of Engineers, the final integrated project implementation report and environmental impact statement on the Central Everglades Planning Project, which was issued in July of 2014, and a revision was in December 2014. So the consent decree established a technical oversight committee and its five parties who need to keep track of water quality compliance. These are scientific and technical experts from Everglades National Park, the ARM Loxahatchee National Wildlife Refuge, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, the South Florida Water Management District, and the Florida Department of Environmental Protection. The consent decree is a federal court entity. So the state of Florida needed something analogous in Florida law to give the state the legislative authority to follow through with meeting the terms of the consent decree. Another reason for creating an analogous Florida law was to have the ability to generate revenue for remedies called for in the consent decree. So we have the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Everglades Protection Act. It's located in Florida statute section 373.4592 as passed in 1991. It became the Everglades Forever Act when it was formally passed in 1994. It required the South Florida Water Management District to establish strategies for developing programs and projects designed to bring facilities into compliance with applicable water quality standards and restore the Everglades hydro period, including the identification and acquisition of lands for the purpose of water treatment or implementation of stormwater management systems, and the development of a permitting system for discharges into waters managed by the district. Strategies for establishing research programs to measure program and project effectiveness. Recommended ambient concentration levels and discharge limitations for phosphorus appropriate to achieve and maintain compliance with applicable state water quality standards. Proposed interim concentration levels designed to achieve compliance with water quality standards to the maximum extent practicable. And a monitoring program to ensure the accuracy of data and measure progress towards achieving interim concentration levels and applicable water quality standards. So here are some excerpts from the Florida statute. Implementation of previous plans and programs has not been as timely as is necessary to restore and protect unique flora and fauna of the Everglades. Authorize the South Florida Water Management District to proceed expeditiously with implementation of the Everglades program. Pursue comprehensive and innovative solutions to issues of water quality, water quantity, hydro period, and invasion of exotic species which face the Everglades ecosystem. Water quality and water quantity must be preserved and protected in a manner that is long-term and comprehensive. Preserve natural values in the Everglades while also maintaining the quality of life for all residents of South Florida. Minimize the impact on South Florida jobs. This includes agriculture, tourism, and nature resource-related jobs. STAs and BMPs are currently the best available technology for achieving the interim water quality goals of the Everglades program. And use flexibility so that superior technology may be utilized when available. So Florida gave itself some broad language to be flexible as science came available and they could improve things. So we have stormwater treatment areas, STAs. It's important to note that stormwater treatment areas are human-created wetlands to treat phosphorus right before it enters the Everglades. These are the largest treatment wetlands in the world. Other treatment wetlands are for wastewater, commonly. These are designed to meet water quality, especially phosphorus levels. And other treatment wetlands focus on nitrogen treatment. All right, so take a look at the treatment wetlands in the Everglades construction project. This figure is from the South Florida Water Management District publication, Splash, Quick Facts on Restoration Strategies for Clean Water for the Everglades. So the next thing we have is best management practices, BMPs. These were to control phosphorus pollution at the source. There are economic incentives for the agricultural industry to reduce their phosphorus output. There's a menu of options to work with farm by farm. And compliance is not farm by farm, but by the larger agricultural basis. Question, do you think this makes it easier or harder to remain in compliance for BMPs if you're going farm by farm? All right, so back to our litigation chronology. The interim water quality goals became effective for the refuge in 1999. The consent decree was modified in 2001. The Everglades Forever Act was amended in 2003. Judge Hoovler was removed from the case and replaced by Judge Moreno in September of 2003. Judge Moreno appointed a special master in October of 2003. The Miccosukee tribe files various motions, resulting in court hearings beginning in 2004, and the EPA approves rules in 2005, except for refuge monitoring stations. So, in 2003, the Florida legislature made alterations to the Everglades Forever Act. There was a huge uproar over this because the state extended the deadline to meet certain performance measures, as well as creating the Environmental Regulatory Commission to come up with a numerical goal for phosphorus parts per billion per gallon of water that flows into the Loxahatchee Refuge and the Everglades National Park. Florida acknowledged that they are trying to clean up the Everglades, and the original timeline set out hadn't worked as projected. Florida recommitted itself to clean up the Everglades and also stated that it was balancing various needs from the environment to agriculture to tourism and to local residents. So what was wrong? 10-year delays and additional loopholes. Environmental groups argued that the state had ditched any and all timelines as set out in the consent decree. And state language gave the state leeway to sidestep parts of the consent decree if they wanted. The Florida plan said to implement what is in the pipeline, then measure data before trying anything new. It could be seen as a cost-saving measure in order to use what technology was currently available and cost measurable instead of using untested theories whose total costs couldn't be presently calculated. What had the environmental community hopping mad? Well, the Everglades cleanup is the largest ecosystem restoration project ever committed to. I won't say conceived because there are large CERCLA projects as well as conceived ecosystem restoration projects for the Mississippi Delta and in places in California, for example. But this is a full ecosystem restoration project that is being planned and executed. Environmental groups went nuts over the language again because the state didn't say get it done by X date. The state said expeditiously but with flexibility. It is argued that they ditched the deadlines in the consent decree and were therefore violating the consent decree. And we'll look at what that means in a minute. So another thing to point out is that Judge Moreno appointed a special master in October 2003. Judge Moreno was at the time and is still well known in judicial circles for managing large multi-party cases. When a judge is dealing with a case, such as the Everglades lawsuit, when there are a lot of scientific proposals, language, and or data, the judge has the option to bring aboard a special master. A special master is someone, not always a lawyer, who can review all the scientific mumbo-jumbo and boil it down into clearer legal concepts to assist the judge in making a decision. The special master reports directly to the judge and is not paid or overseen by any of the parties. Small sidebar here about the legal system. Usually judges are lawyers. There are rare exceptions. A judge is someone who understands the legal system and can view an argument impartially to determine whether or not the law was followed, thereby determining who wins the argument. Basically, a referee. A referee knows the rules and calls the fouls when a player doesn't abide by the rules. Except that a judge doesn't have to be well-versed in the specific laws in a case before that case is before the court. During the presentation of the argument by both sides, the plaintiff will tell the judge what laws apply, and the defendant will not only say he or she did abide by the laws the plaintiff brings up, but may also bring the judge's attention to other laws that might have an effect on the case as well. All right, so continuing on our chronology, federal judge finds the state in violation of refuge levels in June 2005, ordered hearings in 2006 by the special master to determine remedial measures. The special master issued his report July 5th, 2006, agreeing with the court that a violation of the consent decree had occurred according to the scientific evidence provided during the hearings. The long-term water quality goals became effective December 31st, 2006. There was a water quality problem in the Loxahatchee National Wildlife Refuge in October of 2007. Another one occurred in November of 2008. This occurred 13 months after the one in 2007. If it had been 12 months, it would have resulted in a potential violation of the consent decree. And it did occur in 2009, in June 2009. So the BMPs upstream source control failed in 2007 for the first time ever. The STAs were not discharging at low enough concentrations. The Miccosukee tribe filed suit to reopen the consent decree at the end of 2009. All right, so let's keep going to today in the future. There was a flurry of activity between 2009 and 2011. In 2009, the US EPA issues an amended determination in another federal case, Judge Gold's court, which also focused on water quality since 2004. This helped trigger a sequence of events in both lawsuits. And here's an outline of the court activities taken from the 2012 National Academy of Sciences biennial review of the progress on Everglades restoration. So 2009, EPA issues determination. January 4, 2010, Judge Gold holds evidentiary hearings. March 31, 2010, Judge Moreno adopts a special master's report from 2006. Note, guys, that's 4 years. April 14, 2010, Judge Gold orders EPA to issue an amended determination. September 3, 2010, the EPA issues the amended determination. October 25th, Judge Moreno holds a hearing. And then, still in 2010, South Florida Water Management District sends a letter to the EPA declining to comply with the amended determination. Gosh, that sounds like fun. Still in 2010, the court in a lawsuit involving a bond issue rules that the district has legal authority to purchase U.S. sugar property. In 2011, Governor Rick Scott suspends rulemaking in Florida. March 23, 2011, Judge Moreno orders construction previously allowed on Everglades Reservoir to be stopped. April 26, 2011, Judge Gold issues an omnibus order. And then we skip to 2019, Judge Moreno rejected an appeal by the state to get out of the consent decree. So this excerpt is an excellent timeline with a summary paragraph each on significant legal actions in Everglades water quality, and is available through the link here. So it's the NCR 2014 Progress Towards Restoring the Everglades Fifth Biennial Review. And yes, I've checked all these links. Most recently, in January 2019, the governing board of the South Florida Water Management District voted to vacate the consent decree. Environmental groups to DeSantis stop district's effort to vacate Everglades consent decree. But remember what we discussed earlier about the consent decree. The parties agreed that only the court could make a change to their agreement. So, in spite of the January 2019 decision by the district, it still had to go to court. In February 2019, Judge Moreno denied a petition by the state of Florida to be let out of the consent decree by ruling on invalidating or vacating the consent decree. The ruling was made without prejudice, which means that the judge said that the state could come back to the court with their arguments in the future. There's a link to that decision. By the way, you can track the status of compliance monitoring on the TOC's webpage. In addition to these resources, the Water Resource Development Act of 2000, Section 601, and the Programmatic Regulations in 2003 require the secretaries of the Army and the Interior to jointly submit a report to Congress on the progress of SERP implementation every 5 years. The report notes accomplishments in areas that include construction, outreach activities, new science, and funding for that 5-year period, and what is anticipated over the next 5 years. The last report to Congress was recently submitted in 2020, since that was the end of the 5 years. Now, I keep mentioning SERP, C-E-R-P. It stands for Comprehensive Everglades Restoration Plan. So we have the Water Resources Development Act, Section 601, B1A, a framework for modifications and operational changes to the Central and South Florida project that are needed to restore, preserve, and protect the South Florida ecosystem while providing for other water-related needs of the region, including water supply and flood protection. The plan shall be implemented to ensure the protection of water quality in the reduction of the loss of freshwater from and the improvement of the environment of the South Florida ecosystem and to achieve and maintain the benefits to the natural system and human environment described in the plan and required pursuant to this section for as long as the project is authorized. So here's a breakdown of SERP components: aquifer storage and recovery, surface water storage reservoir, stormwater treatment areas, reuse of wastewater, seepage management, removing barriers to sheet flow, operational changes, which all have potential wetland impacts. So it contains a number of projects and studies directly for the development, conservation, and restoration of the nation's water resources. Specifically, when you're looking at Section 601 to South Florida, it includes initial projects for the Comprehensive Everglades Restoration Plan. It includes a 50-50 cost share. Unless the state doesn't hold up its end of the bargain, then the feds can withhold funds and force the state to pay more. The state and federal lands involved are the Loxahatchee National Wildlife Refuge, Everglades National Park, and Biscayne Bay National Park, and Big Cypress National Preserve. I love asking this question, guys. Side note, the Water Resources Development Acts are the sources of federal authorization for funding for Everglades restoration. A really excellent summary of the suite of WERDA authorizations for SERP to date was updated by the Congressional Research Service on August 20th, 2022, and can be found at that link. Now, Congress needed a system for checks and balances. So, Section 601J, Independent Scientific Review of SERP. Note, as you read this, I point out National Academies of Science. In English, there has to be an independent scientific review panel set up, and Congress recommended using the National Academy of Sciences to find scientists to sit on such panel. Also, the panel has to submit a written report every 2 years to Congress. The Secretary of the Army, the Secretary of the Interior, and the Governor of Florida. The link to the 2016 report is in the Litigation Chronology Part 3. The most recent progress report by the National Academies was released in December 2022, including a detailed review of the Stormwater Treatment Area Program. If you want to look at what the status of the science is and where we are in the restoration process, here is that link. Now, why not declare the state in violation and reopen the consent decree? When the Everglades Forever Act was being debated for passage and before it was signed, Congress threatened to withhold some of the federal funding and pressure the executive branch to fight Florida's actions. If the state or the feds are found in violation of the consent decree, the court can reopen it and rewrite parts of the agreement. Why could this be an interesting challenge? Well, if the consent decree is opened, all parties to the lawsuit can and will demand that they put in their 2 cents and totally redo the whole decree. Could be good, could be not so good. Remember, the original agreement was decided upon between the federal government and the state of Florida. Other parties petitioned the court to intervene in the lawsuit in order to protect their own legal interests. If the consent decree is reopened, all of these parties, from agriculture to the Miccosukee tribe to the environmental groups to local governments, will all want space at the table with the state and the feds to redo this settlement agreement. Talk about a mess. All right, midterm review. Please note that the questions were taken from the "by the end of this lecture, you should be able to describe" section of each class lecture. Also note, not all class lecture questions are listed below. If a question is not listed below, you can safely assume it will not be on the midterm. So, there's what are the 3 major human phenomena that account for almost all environmental degradation? Population, consumption, pollution. And remember that population is the most devastating of the 3. Describe the commons and the 4 possible arrangements to protect the resources of the commons. It's an essay question, guys. So you will need to state that the commons is a legal scenario used to teach law students about environmental law and common resources. You need to state what the 4 strategies are and how each one works. For instance, The economics incentive strategy is a pollution tax. You got to do it for all four of the strategies. Define the four steps of a risk assessment process as defined in this course. We've got hazard ID, exposure assessment, dose response relationship, and risk characterization. I'm asking for definitions here, not just what the four steps are called. Which section of the National Environmental Policy Act causes all litigation, and what are that section's requirements? Also, does this section apply to everyone? You can use the section number, it's section 102. I am also asking for a bit of an explanation here about whether this applies to every person in the United States. The answer is more than just the section number. What are the three threshold requirements of environmental impact statement? When in the process does an EIS have to be prepared? When you go through the three threshold requirements, federal, major, significant environmental impact, remember to include any problems that crop up as well as how certain things are defined. And it's significant. So the small handle problem, you got to bring this up. And it is important to know that the EIS needs to be done early enough in the process to be helpful when making the ultimate decision. It is not just a rubber stamp. What does FONSI stand for? This is when an EIS is not required. There is a finding of no significant impact. Define what an endangered species is under federal law. Give three examples. This term means any species which is in danger of extinction throughout all or a significant portion of its range. I don't care about the bugs. But it is necessary to note that the range of a species is a major requirement to consider when determining if a species is endangered. Describe the ESA's three-pronged approach to species preservation and discuss each prong. Remember, the ESA closed down the U.S. market in endangered wildlife. It prohibits taking an endangered species and imposes criminal sanctions and prohibits any federal action that could possibly harm an endangered or threatened species. Describe the term critical habitat as defined in the ESA. Critical habitat is a geographic area occupied by the species at the time of listing that has physical and biological features essential for the conservation of the species and which may require special management consideration and protection. It does not include the entire geographical range of the species. Note, it is necessary to include that a critical habitat does not include the entire geographical range. What is a non-market species? It's one where a market value is not measurable. What is the God Committee? What is their purpose? The God Committee is a committee formed under the ESA that can decide a project is more beneficial than the destruction of a species and can allow a federal project to go forward. What does the term take mean? It is necessary to include all the possible alternate words in this definition. So, harm, harass, pursue, hunt, shoot, wound, kill, trap, capture, or collect, or to attempt to engage in any such conduct. What does Florida's species of special concern mean? It is a species that has significant vulnerability due to habitat modification, meets certain criteria for threatened or endangered species, but is lacking conclusive data, occupies an unusually vital or essential ecological niche where its decline impacts many other species, has not recovered from past population depletion, or has been intentionally introduced or is being experimentally managed to attain specific objectives. What constitutional provision allowed Congress to pass the Clean Water Act? I'm looking specifically for the Commerce Clause. What is a source as defined by the Clean Water Act? This is the federal definition section of the lecture. A source is any building, structure, facility, or installation from which there is or may be the discharge of pollutants. I'm looking for all four items mentioned in this definition, i.e. building, structure, facility, or installation. What does TMDL stand for, and what is Florida's legal definition of TMDL? TMDL stands for total maximum daily load. Florida defines this term to mean the sum of the individual waste load allocations for point sources and the load allocations for non-point sources and natural background. What is unique about Florida's attempts to use alternatives to regulatory permitting? The Florida DEP is charged with finding alternative methods aside from regulatory permitting that will not increase pollution discharges and reduce transaction costs for both business and government. What are the five conventional pollutants? They are 5-day biochemical oxygen demand, total suspended solids, pH, fecal coliform, and oil and grease. How does the CWA describe the term primary pollutant? It is a toxic pollutant. Examples are arsenic, lead, mercury, etc. What are the five non-conventional pollutants? They are ammonia, nitrogen, phosphorus, chemical oxygen demand, and whole effluent toxicity. What types of permits are issued under the NPDES program? Remember, we've got two, individual and general. Individual permits are specifically tailored to one specific individual facility. General permits cover multiple facilities within a specific category. The watershed permits are only experimental. They're not incorporated into the law itself. Who administers the Clean Water Act Section 404 Dredge and Fill Permitting Program? That's the Army Corps of Engineers. List five types of wetlands found in Florida. There are 11. You can list any five out of the 11 types of swamps, marshes, bayheads, bogs, cypress domes and strands, sloughs, wet prairies, riverine swamps and marshes, hydric seepage slopes, tidal marshes, or mangrove swamps. Name one insect, one bird, and one mammal that are listed as endangered or threatened species residing in Florida. You can go between lectures 2 and 5 for this. And this is the whole state, not just the Everglades. Some examples are the Miami blue butterfly, the Shouse swallowtail butterfly, the Florida scrub jay, which I still have not seen, the wood stork, the sandhill crane, the Florida panther, the Lower Keys rabbit, etc. Which piece of federal legislation created the National Wildlife Refuge System? The National Wildlife Refuge System is in place to protect environmentally sensitive geographic areas to preserve wildlife resources, and it was put in place by the Fish and Wildlife Coordination Act of 1934. I like to ask this question because my husband worked for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for 9 years. All right, describe Florida's plans for mitigating wetland loss and the limitations set forth in those plans. You might want to just quote this. This is an open notes exam. So, Florida statutes requires mitigation banks and offsite regional mitigation should emphasize the restoration and enhancement of degraded ecosystems and the preservation of uplands and wetlands as intact ecosystems rather than the alteration of landscapes to create wetlands. The Florida Mitigation Program covers not only state lands but also private lands. And the statute states that a mitigation wetland can only be created in an area if there was a wetland there historically. Name the five agency representatives, parties of the TOC, Technical Oversight Committee. There's the Everglades National Park, the Arthur R. Marshall Loxahatchee National Wildlife Refuge, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, the South Florida Water Management District, and the Florida Department of Environmental Protection. List the two national parks, one national preserve and one national wildlife refuge, which are included in the SERP. There's Everglades National Park, Biscayne Bay National Park, Big Cypress National Preserve, and the ARM Loxahatchee National Wildlife Refuge. Which entity does Congress identify in the SERP authorization to provide scientific review of all projects proposed under SERP? That's the National Academy of Sciences. And what is the second oldest lawsuit in the United States? The Exxon Valdez, which I tend to ask as the extra credit question. All right, I will see you guys on the discussion board, and I am setting up the midterm now.